TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of useful consciousness. In times of war, who dies and who makes a killing? Dick Cheney and Halliburton. Thousands of employees of Halliburton, Vice President Cheney's former company, are working alongside American troops in Kuwait and Turkey under a package deal worth close to $1 billion. Prothap Chatterjee is an investigative journalist who just published a major expose that spells out in detail how Cheney's former company, Halliburton, and its subsidiary Brown & Root make money off the war. Here is his report, tracing Cheney's career from the Pentagon to CEO of Halliburton back to the U.S. government. Halliburton, the company he first employed and that then employed him, had a meteoric rise in government contracts. Here is Prothap Chatterjee, interviewed in Berkeley on April 2, 2003.
I'm a researcher who has focused on the environmental and human rights impacts of many large corporations and banks. And Halliburton is one of these major companies. Its major business has been providing services to the oil companies, big multinationals such as Chevron or Exxon or Mobil. What they do is they build pipelines for them, and they build offshore platforms for them and help them transport oil. They, in fact, are the world's largest oil service company. So when Dick Cheney came to head up the company, you know, I began to wonder if they would be getting contracts with the military, and I started to look into that fact. And it turned out that they had contracts with the military, and they have had contracts with the military for many years. I mean, going back to Vietnam, before Dick Cheney was involved with them, before Brown & Root, which is a company in Houston that is owned by Halliburton, was part of Halliburton, they were building bases for the U.S. military in the previous war in Southeast Asia, in Vietnam and Laos and places like that. So I started to wonder if indeed this pattern would be duplicated in the current war on quote-unquote terrorism. And the first clue I got was I discovered this program that they had been doing work for the military under this privatization sort of initiative that had started back in 1992 under Dick Cheney. And Dick Cheney at the time, in 1992, was Secretary of Defense. He was a career politician who had spent almost all of his time in Washington, D.C., being a member of Congress and later being a bureaucrat and the head of the Pentagon. And if you think back to that time, it was just after the fall of the Berlin Wall, the end of the Cold War, and the U.S. military was looking to downsize and to reduce costs. And they didn't feel that they needed to have these huge bases on the west coast of the United States or in East, you know, overlooking Eastern Europe. And so what they wanted to do is move military back, reduce the number of people in the military. And one way they thought they could do that was by basically getting rid of some of the more mundane functions, some of the more simple tasks, such as setting up tents when they go overseas, building kitchen facilities, cooking the food, you know, running hospitals, building prisons for prisoners of war, maintaining the trucks and various vehicles. So they came up with this plan. Dick Cheney asked Halliburton to look into the possibility of privatizing these functions. And he paid them $3.9 million. They came up with a plan on paper. And 6 months after the plan had been drafted, Dick Cheney went back to them and said, can you update this plan so we can actually put it into practice? Pay them another $1 million. And at the end of the day, when the contract was put out to bid, lo and behold, the first company to win this was Brown & Root. And Brown Root got a lot of work out of this. They went to work, for example, in Somalia and various other places, helping the U.S. troops with, again, what I like to call MASH functions. These are, you know, like in the movie MASH, simple support functions that don't involve combat in the field and can be done by anybody, but they wanted somebody to manage. And in many ways, a company like Halliburton, or their main rival in this field is a company called DynCorp, which is also based out in the Washington, D.C. area. And also other companies, large construction companies like Bechtel, are used to hiring thousands of workers in foreign countries and managing them and providing facilities. So they, in many ways, are the ideal people to hire for these kinds of jobs. So this is what happened. And in fact, when Dick Cheney left the Pentagon and returned to a private life, his first job was at a think tank for a couple of years. He had to, you know, place a certain amount of time between his job in the Pentagon and then working with the very contractors he had hired. But after a couple of years, Halliburton hired him to become the chief executive officer. Now, recall that I said this is a man with no experience in corporate America whatsoever, a career politician. So it seems a little strange that he would be hired to do this job. But when you think about it, the most important asset he had was his knowledge of people in government, and that's what he brought to Halliburton's offices in Houston. He brought his Rolodex, and he, in fact, brought some of his staff. One of his, the man he appointed to take over government relations was a guy called Joe Gribben. And now Joe Gribben was an aide to him in the Pentagon and became the man in charge of government relations. So what his job was working with people like the Pentagon to make sure they got more contracts. And over a period of the 4 or 5 years Dick Cheney was the chief executive, the amount of government contracts, military contracts in particular, between Brown and Root and the Pentagon multiplied something like tenfold by a large amount. And it was because, I assume, he was working his contacts. And he probably wouldn't deny that he was doing that kind of thing. He was working with the Clinton administration officials to help set up contracts also for oil companies and to get funding from the U.S. government to do oil drilling in Brazil, in Angola, in Bangladesh, you know, get support from the U.S. government. However, what did happen at that point in time was they lost the main military contract, the contract which had been set up, this privatization of these basic support functions for the military, is called LOGCAP, or the Logistics Civilian Augmentation Program. So they lost that contract to their rival, which was DynCorp, under the Clinton administration. However, something very interesting happened at that point, which was that despite the fact they lost the contract, since they were the ones who started in this business, they had the most experience. And so at that point, the main sort of, I think it was called Operation Just Endeavor, I forget exactly, in Bosnia, in former Yugoslavia, took place. And so DynCorp had the contract to run the U.S. military bases there. However, Brown & Root was already there under the previous contract. So DynCorp ended up subcontracting to Brown & Root. And in fact, Brown & Root made more money than DynCorp, their rival, in this period of time, as a subcontractor to them. They made $2.2 billion over a period of about 4 years. Now, as it happened, DynCorp got into a lot of trouble at the time. And one reason they got into this huge scandal because their employees were found smuggling sex slaves out of the former Yugoslavia. And as a result of that, I think, nobody's actually confirmed that, but they lost the next time the contract came up to bid, which was in December 2001, right after September 11th, new government in power, George Bush Jr. was president and Dick Cheney was vice president. Hey presto, Dick Cheney's old company, Halliburton, wins the new contract. And since then, I mean, if you think $2.2 billion was a large amount of money, this is going to completely dwarf that in terms of the amount of money. It's been in operation for just over a year. And in that 1 year alone, the military told me a week or two ago that they had assigned $830 million in contracts. I was talking to somebody at Newsweek the other day who said the military just upped the amount that they had predicted to $1.5 billion. Now, under LOGCAP, Normally, it's a five-year contract. However, they've switched the system now to what they call IDIQ, which is, see, the military has to report back to the public if they hand out a contract for more than $5 million. They're required to list it on a web page, and anybody can check it. Every single day, these contracts are listed, a half dozen contracts are listed. So they did that in this case. But instead of specifying, because, I mean, the excuse was they didn't know how much money would be spent in this case. Instead of specifying, they made it open-ended, which means the military can send Brown and Root at 72 hours notice anywhere in the world for any amount of money if the government deems it necessary. And that's exactly what's happened. Starting December 2001, they signed the contract. It came into effect in February of 2002. And then they started to get sent overseas. As far as I can tell, the first time they were sent overseas under the new set of contracts, as opposed to Bosnia, which is under the previous set of contracts, was when they were sent to Uzbekistan soon after the main war in Afghanistan was finished to help run a base in Karshi in central Uzbekistan, which I visited shortly after Afghanistan fell to the United States and Britain's military and the Northern Alliance, or rather Air Force. Halliburton is now running that base in Uzbekistan and have since then gone on to being put in charge of the Bagram and Kandahar base of the U.S. military in Afghanistan. So those are the first two countries that I know of. Since then, the military tells me they've been invited to run bases in many other countries, five other countries specifically. In the current theater of operations, as the military likes to call it, which is the Iraq War, they have contracts in Jordan, in Turkey, and in Kuwait, where they're running military bases under LOGCAP. The one that they seem to have the most number of employees, although I don't know this for sure, certainly it's more than any other country that I have numbers for, is Kuwait, where they have 1,800 Halliburton employees working alongside the troops, setting up tents, getting them ready to go into battle. They also work in Turkey, where actually they have been under contract with the U.S. government for 12 years prior to LOGCAP to run Operation Northern Watch. They run the base at Incirlik, just outside Adana, not far from the Mediterranean, where the U.S. and British military have been enforcing the no-fly zones that they created over northern Iraq. And that basically, those bases and the military equipment, the firefighting trucks, they're all maintained by Brown and Root. So that's in that current theater of operations. In addition, there are two other countries that are not immediately adjacent to Iraq, and those are Georgia, where there is another quote-unquote war on terrorism in the Panski Gorge, and in Djibouti, which is right across the Red Sea from Yemen, where once again there's been a lot of activity, a lot of al-Qaeda support. That's in fact the country I believe that Osama bin Laden was born in. And so there's a huge U.S. base in Djibouti, a former French colony with a lot of military facilities for the French. And Brown and Root is helping run the facilities there. They didn't give me the number, or to date have not given me the numbers of people involved in those operations, but I think they're kind of smaller, both in Georgia and Djibouti.
This looks like a really interesting change in policies. For one, I'd like you to comment some more on this privatization aspect of it.
I forget the exact figures, but the number of U.S. military has substantially shrunk from a decade or two ago. I mean, we have halved as many people in the military, so they literally need more bodies. Plus, it's cheaper. So you can look at it as privatization, but I often can, you know, see it as simply outsourcing, you know, labor to, you know, take advantage of, you know, the globalization and cheaper labor forces. So partly it's that. I would also make the argument there's definitely privatization and profiteering that's happening here, where it benefits, you know, the members of the administration and their friends in high places. So, for example, Dick Cheney, as we mentioned, was chief executive of Halliburton. Now, when he was chief executive and he quit the company to become George Bush's running mate, he was given a severance package. And this is a large severance package by any standards except those of Fortune 500 companies. It was, and even by those standards, it's pretty high. It was $30 million in shares that he sold and the amount of money that he got. Now, You would say that's a pretty handsome payoff for somebody who's about to go and work for the very people who gave you your contracts. And if somebody gave me $30 million, they wouldn't have to pay me on commission. I'd probably give them whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted, in perpetuity. And that's effectively what's happening with Dick Cheney. Now, I'm sure he's an honorable man and that hasn't influenced his judgment, but the fact of the matter remains that he asked them to defer his compensation over a period of 5 years so he could save on taxes. This is a man who's happy to spend our taxes bombing other people. He wants to save on taxes. And so he has reported and is reporting for 5 years an income from Halliburton. Despite the fact that he's vice president of the country, he is getting money from Halliburton, this company that's winning billions of dollars in contracts. And in his statement, his financial statement that he's reported, it amounts to something between $100,000 and $1 million a year. He hasn't specified exactly how much, although my friends at Newsweek tell me that they just got the information perhaps a couple of days ago that he's actually said that the total sum is $800,000 over these 5 years. It's been split up over 5 years to reduce his costs. But as far as I'm concerned, this is money that the company is paying him while he is vice president. It was agreed on in advance, and that's legal, and that's fine by me. But a lot of people have a system that's called a retainer. As a journalist, people sometimes pay me in order to have access to me whenever they need to. And I'm not paid specifically. I've worked in lawsuits, for example, in Norway, where I was paid a sum of money so that I was available. And then I might be paid additionally for specific expert testimony that I have given or some such thing. Now, I don't know that Dick Cheney has given them specific advice. His office has told me that he has not been involved in these contracts at all. However, they also told me that he was not receiving any money. And now it turns out that quite legally he's receiving money. This is also an office that has refused to disclose who he's been meeting with in terms of setting energy policy. This is a man who met with oil companies before sending troops into Iraq to figure out how to, seize the oil platforms and turn them over to other people to run. He met with British Petroleum and people like that. So why would I believe the fact that he is not meeting with Halliburton? I mean, it may simply be, a man of speech that it turns out 10 years down the road when these papers get declassified. In fact, he did meet with them, but in a way that would not seem quite as a naked sort of wartime profiteering or corruption. But at the very least, it's, nepotism and it's a conflict of interest.
So, what's the recent news on
Okay, now,
Halliburton?
there's been a lot of speculation in the papers, particularly starting with a report in the Wall Street Journal that Halliburton would get the contracts to reconstruct Iraq after the war. And they would also get the contract to put out any oil fires that might be set. Now, as it turns out, some of that was true and some of it was not quite true, although circumstances may have caused the U.S. government and Halliburton to change the contract process so as not to appear like there was such a conflict of interest or such. So, what they did was under the log cap program, under the military contract that they were asked to come in and design a method to put out any oil fires. And because that contract allows them to get any amount of time, go anywhere, and do anything for the military, when it turned out that some fires had been set, they immediately got that contract. It was not put out to bid to anybody else because it was considered part of this larger military contract to support the military. In times of war, for whatever might be necessary. So they have a contract which could be worth close to $1 billion to put out any oil fires and repair these oil facilities. And once again, they are, in terms of building facilities and repairing facilities, one of the leading companies, in fact, the biggest company in this field in the world. The second thing that they were nominated for. So the first contract was under the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It was a military function. The second contract was under the U.S. Agency for International Development. And what USAID has been shortlisting companies for is contracts to rebuild Iraq. And it's five American companies And specifically, they are awarding the contract only to American companies because they feel that other countries haven't come through in supporting this invasion of Iraq. However, it needs to be pointed out the British are pretty upset because they haven't been shortlisted for any of these contracts. Halliburton was one of five companies. Parsons was another. Bechtel was another. I forget the name of the two other, but there were five companies shortlisted. However, because of the scandal that erupted after the Wall Street Journal reported that they were on the shortlist, either Brown & Root/Halliburton dropped out of the race, or they were asked to leave the race or disqualified. So it's been narrowed down to two companies, of which Brown & Root is not one. So they are not about to win the contract for reconstruction of Iraq. However, having said that, the USAID has not ruled out that there might be a subcontract on the deal. So right now, they're not one of the main two contractors in the bid to reconstruct the country. That's if the reconstruction happens, if the U.S. wins the invasion of Iraq and gets to, you know, run the country.
Would you take a moment to give a portrait of Bechtel and its past and future involvement?
Sure. Bechtel is the largest private company in the San Francisco Bay Area. They're an old company. They've existed for just over 100 years. Started out in the railroad business. They are also a large military and construction contractor. They were also involved in Vietnam in building, helping build bases and airports and what have you. I think they helped build the Da Nang facility for the U.S. military. So Bechtel is on the short list of what was five companies, including Brown & Root, but since they've dropped out, it's now four companies. But that four has been shortlisted to two, and the military, the USAID has not actually told us who those two are. And it's very possible that one of them is Bechtel, but they may not be on it. However, it is true that Bechtel was one of the contractors to put out the oil fires in Kuwait 10 years ago in the first Gulf War. Bechtel has a long history of working for the government and in constructing projects that have been environmental disasters. In particular, they're famous for their involvement in the nuclear industry. Bechtel built 40% of this country's nuclear capacity, starting with the first civilian nuclear reactor, which was in Idaho. And they, in fact, just over 50 years ago, and in fact, Bechtel also has the contract to clean up the waste left behind by the 100 or so mini reactors that are scattered in the site in eastern Idaho, I think. But in addition to that, they built a bunch of other nuclear facilities, such as San Onofre in San Diego, Diablo Canyon here in California, and Tarapur in India, many places. They are a major contractor in terms of cleanup of nuclear facilities, such as, you know, the military facilities in Savannah, Georgia, I think. But also running the nuclear test site in Nevada, where the U.S. military has been testing nuclear weapons for a long time. So the Mercury test site, as it's known, is run by Bechtel. So they have a long history in the nuclear industry. They have a long history also in the gold industry in building. They've built a lot of the major mines in Nevada. They built, you know, one of the world's largest gold mines in Papua, in the island of Papua, in the Pacific, which is partly Indonesian and partly belongs to the country Papua New Guinea. They built a bunch of gold mines in that region. They've also been involved in building a lot of large dams. The Hoover Dam was built by Bechtel. So their company that's had Friends in High Places. In fact, there's a book called Friends in High Places by Latin McCartney on the subject, talking about how people like George Shultz and Caspar Weinberger are people who work for the company and help them get a lot of contracts, particularly through the Export-Import Bank of the United States.
Can we just go out with to reflect for a moment on this amazing irony that there are companies that benefit from the conduct of war and then benefit from repairing the destruction that was just caused by their involvement. And in all cases, it's the taxpayers who foot the bill.
Yeah. There's a company called United Technologies that most people have probably never heard of. And once upon a time, Boeing, United Airlines, United Technologies were one company, and that's no longer true. They are a company based in, I think, in New Haven, Connecticut, and they're a huge, huge, huge company in the United States. And they build Otis elevators, Pratt & Whitney engines for aircraft, and Whirlpool washing machines, but they're not known by their corporate name. A friend of mine used to work there, and during the bombing of Basra, and I don't mean the current bombing of Basra, I mean the previous bombing of Basra, he was watching the news on television, and one of his colleagues at United Technologies, you know, was very upset that they were bombing Basra, because he said, you know, we built that facility. And his colleague turned around to him and said, but we also provided the engines for the fighter aircraft that are bombing those facilities, and we're going to get the contract to repair it. So, you know, and that's not true. I mean, Bechtel and Halliburton don't build fighter aircraft. United Technologies do. But it's effectively, they do very similar things. Halliburton is the company that has built more pipelines and deep sea platforms than any other company in the world. And they are now profiting from going to war and invading these people, our taxpayer money. So, you know, not only is it a conflict of interest, I mean, it's absolutely criminal. I think these people need to be brought before something at least like the Nuremberg trials and the same judgments and trials need to be brought against George Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, all these people. They are criminals on, you know, the level of any of the other people who ran, you know, Nazi Germany.
You heard an exposé of Vice President Dick Cheney and his former company, Halliburton, by Prothap Chatterjee. He's an investigative journalist who has focused on the environmental and human rights impacts of large corporations and banks. You can read his articles that now have become a major news item, even on the mainstream media, on the website of CorpWatch at www.corpwatch.org. That's CORPWATCH.org. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on Halliburton, Dick Cheney, and Prothap Chatterjee's work on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information how to order a copy of this program by calling us. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us, toll-free, anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call. Thank you.